afternoon, good evening, whenever you are listening to us. Welcome to another PwC Europe Transfer Pricing podcast. My name is Lorenz Bernhardt. I'm a transfer pricing partner resident in Berlin. I'm also co-heading PwC Europe's transfer pricing practice. In this podcast, we want to talk about two topics. One is virtual organizations, and the other one refers to what's called BEPS 2.0 or digital service tax. Before we dive into the topics, I'm here with two of my most valued colleagues, Joanna Gniadecka and Jacob Palmer. Hi, Joanna. Hi, Jacob.
Hi, Lawrence. Hello, everyone. My name is Joanna Gniadecka. I am Transfer Pricing Director in Netherlands, based in Amsterdam. Happy to be with you today.
And good morning. Hello, wherever you are, also from myself. Jacob Parma, Transfer Pricing Director from PwC Switzerland and part of PwC Europe.
So you see, we are combining the Netherlands, Switzerland and Germany in this podcast. Actually, PwC Europe comprises six countries, Belgium, in addition to the three I named, Belgium, Austria, as well as Turkey. And we have about 300 dedicated transfer pricing professionals in these countries, happy to serve cross-border to clients. The podcast, and that's kind of the second introductory remarks, and that's part of a series, goes back to our Global TP conference held in last October 2020, which obviously was held this time virtual. It's typically a physical meeting, but this time it was all virtual, and it was probably the biggest and the only truly global conference. We covered all three regions. We covered 24 plus time zones. We had 120 live stream workshops, and we had 10 live stream plenaries, which meant for the presenters that they would need to present in the middle of their night. But it was worthwhile. It was worthwhile. More than 3,500 participants and 160 presenters. And with our podcast now, we wanted to update some of the conference most highly rated topics. And that's, again, the purpose of this podcast. Let's come to our first topic, which in essence, Joanna will lead us through: virtual organizations. Joanna, two questions at the beginning. One is, what are virtual organizations? Yeah. And maybe you have one or two examples. And kind of, was that a temporary concept? Or is the perspective now more permanent? Yeah. And what are the main issues we are facing from a transfer pricing perspective?
Thanks, Lawrence. We immediately start with the big questions, because just for everyone, we were discussing before the webcast how the virtual organizations are changing since PwC conference in October, and actually how we see it happening. What is this virtual organization when we talk to our clients? So basically, what I see on the examples of the companies I am speaking with is virtual organizations are basically any organization right now where the management or key employees are not working in the head office or not working in the location where they're supposed to work, but because simply due to the pandemic, people are at, stuck at the countries where they are resident and they are teleworking. So basically all we are now in the situation that we are to some extent virtual, to some extent, to big extent, probably most of us. And when we spoke about it in October, we were still very much in the pandemic mode, thinking that this is probably more or less temporary situation. And now 4 months from the, from the conference, from where we last discussed it, we see that it's not really temporary anymore, but for most of the companies and also for most of the clients that I am discussing this topic with, this starts to be actually a permanent solution. We heard in the news, and basically we are also facing this in our own situation, that companies are moving from, you know, this pre-COVID mode of working in one location or working in a specific fixed location to actually working virtually, to employing technologies and to accept the fact that the employees from the management board through the, you know, all the other layers of the company are actually working somewhere else than in the office of the companies. And where we are actually reflecting about that, this is, I think, the biggest triggering point for a discussion. Is it a permanent solution for the future? And I think that I would be inclined to say probably for most our clients, yes, this will be some kind of the permanent mode to operate with. And of course, it brings, if I think about the, you know, the, there are so many issues that it brings with, but if I am just looking from the my own field of expertise, the transfer pricing, this of course brings a big question. So who I am now from transfer pricing perspective, does my functional profile change? And let's give a very simple example of the client that I am discussing quite recently, who is building a headquarter in the Netherlands. And basically due to the pandemic, the management of the companies is not yet there. So the question is, am I still having actually a headquarter? I'm still can present myself as an entrepreneur in Netherlands, knowing that the management, the key decision maker of the company are not here, will not be here soon because they are in the different countries with different level of restrictions. And even if the restriction will ease, what does it mean? Will these people actually come at the end to the country? Or there will be this feeling that this kind of, you know, this kind of organization, which is really fixed in one place, is not anymore there because simply the human, the employees and the human reflection after the pandemic change and the expectation where we work change. So this is really a big topic, I think, and we could probably discuss it further. But I think the takeaway for me right now would be that this is going to the more permanent mode. Mm. And I'm not sure, Lawrence, if this is also your thinking, your reflection right now.
Yeah, it's in a way crystal ball. I mean, we could not have imagined what happens, mm-hmm. you know, in the last months, kind of a year ago. So I don't know, but and I think it's fair to assume that this will considerably change the way organizations are working. And Joanna, I mean, you know that clients love if advisors only have concerns or issues or topics. so how would you address or what kind of are concrete suggestions to clients, right. given all the complexities you described, to address these complexities going forward?
Right. So I think that we love the issues and the clients love the solutions. And of course, we are looking, if we are looking at just the virtual, you know, organization that are creating under the pandemic, under the COVID situation, of course, what we see, there is a certain guidance coming from OECD level, especially if we think about the permanent establishment issue, which is one of the most, let's say, burning for the client. So basically the question, does the employee working in the other jurisdiction, that the location of the employer, does it create a fixed establishment or the management place of establishment or not? And of course, there is transfer pricing question coming to it, should I allocate any profit in this jurisdiction, right? OECD tries to give us certain certainty about that, saying that regardless, of course, that there could be different domestic requirements and laws for this, but basically from the OECD perspective, this situation should not create a permanent establishment, should not create the additional shift of income to the jurisdiction of the worker who is teleworking from home. And in case of the uncertainty or differences with the domestic laws, there is a certain tiebreaker law supply. So I think in that sense, as long as we are talking about the pandemic type of situation or the situation that are sourced with respect to the medical restrictions simply in the countries, that should not affect the creation of permanent establishment and should not affect the shift of the income to those countries. So to some extent, this is, of course, gives us a certainty, gives us a certain level of safety that the situation is a type of a force majeure situation. So there is no specific additional, income shifting towards that. However, of course, again, the question is how long it is, how long it will progress, and how long we can apply the force majeure in that situation. From a transfer pricing perspective, as I mentioned at the beginning, even more interesting would be to think about it. Is it also is not impacting the substance issue that I was talking at the beginning with respect to the one of my clients? So is it impacting the functional profile of the companies? So again, do I still have a routine activities in the country, even if there is more, for instance, decision maker working in this country than before? Do I have entrepreneur in certain location where I should have my headquarter and decision making functions? Do I still can claim a DMP functions from the intellectual property purposes, right? If I know that the functions under the DMP, again, are spread around the different countries. Still, if we are thinking pandemic, in the pandemic mindset, we still are in this kind of a temporary situation, and the transfer pricing models of the companies should not be affected. But thinking, towards the future, if this will be a fixed situation, not a temporary one, I think this will create a bit of the new reality also for a transfer pricing. Also thinking that transfer pricing requirements are based on substance, are based on people, and are based on location of the decision makers. So this is probably a topic that also will be tackled in the future by BEPS 2.0, maybe 3.0. I will leave it to Jakob. But it's really an interesting question for all of us to think about. How it will translate to the future state of TP requirements.
Jakob, any spontaneous reactions from your side?
I generally share the observations by Joanna, also from my perspective, from what we see in Switzerland. What I wanted to ask the both of you is if, based on the experiences of the last almost full year of COVID-19 impact, if you see certain industries or business model moving more quickly towards adoption of the virtual organization models. In my case, this is primarily clients in financial services industry and obviously software and digital. But maybe from your experience, you see also other types of groups or businesses being affected by these changes.
Oh, that's really interesting. If I would observe through my clients who are the most, let's say, flexible with the virtual working, are of course the clients who actually adopt before COVID the technology that allows them to do it. So the technology agile type of companies, and this is very often not really linked to the industry per se, but the type of company that I am working with. And if I think about every of course the all the digital type of environments, they're simply easier to accept the new reality. And I think for this type of companies, there is no comeback to the old way of doing business. They are much more, let's say, certain now that they can use the technology that they have at place, and actually it works. So, yeah. If that answers the question.
Yeah, that's actually my I can almost mirror that from my perspective. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know that German, our economy is to a considerable extent based on the Mittelstand, middle-sized business, but this means family-owned business with a turnover of 5 billion. So it's middle is a relative noun. However, I mean, I have seen many very agile groups in this space. Yeah, not necessarily the big stock market quoted groups, but kind of these Mittelstand companies, which are so exceedingly quick and have very short reporting lines. So it's also, as Johanna said, less about the industry, but more about how agile groups are, how prepared they were even before those. So that would be my perspective on that. But in light of the timing, Johanna, any concluding remarks on virtual organizations from your side?
Maybe one more, Lawrence, because this is also the question that I'm getting quite often from the clients. So again, how to progress in terms of discussion with tax authorities, how to ensure that there is a certain certainty about how I do business and from the transfer pricing perspective. So my advice would be to document actually what we are doing. To be well prepared in terms of, okay, we are working virtually, but let's really have it documented for any potential discussion with tax authorities, how we are doing business, why we are doing business in that mode. And if anything changes, right, let's really have it well, put it down on paper, because I think this at some point of time we will all face a discussion with the tax authorities one way or another, and it's really good to be prepared for this. So I think maybe it's not the most sophisticated conclusion, in the sense that we always need to be prepared and documented, but I think in that case it really counts that we are prepared for the future developments.
Okay, cool. Thank you very much, Johanna. And let's move on to a term which I don't like at all, BEPS 2.0. Yeah, because what we are talking about is not profit shifting and it's not base erosion, but the term kind of, you know, is widely used. Jacob, to you, I mean, we talked about this, whatever it is called, high profile topic in October. What has happened since then?
Yes, Lawrence. So to use the time, the full term being addressing the tax challenges arising out of the digitalization or globalization of the economy, otherwise known as BEPS 2.0, being a very hot topic over the last year or so for a various number of reasons. The main one being that it addresses some of the most hotly debated tax areas, which is the taxation and allocation of profits of some of the largest and most profitable, in some cases, multinational groups. While on the other hand, it is an extremely interesting topic for us tax advisors, an important topic for our clients, because some of the proposed changes to how international tax rules should work that are being put forward in these discussions could bring the biggest revolution in international tax law in decades. For our viewers and listeners, to be more precise in case of this podcast, BEPS 2.0 deals primarily with two pillars. Pillar one, which is more transfer pricing focused and deals with allocation of profits across different jurisdictions where certain groups are based. And then there's pillar two, which deals primarily with how profits should be taxed, on what level. Pillar two, otherwise associated with the term minimum tax rate. It's not the official name of pillar two, but in essence, it deals with ensuring a minimal level of tax rate to be applied on the profits that are allocated to a jurisdiction. In October, during our global TP conference, we had a lot of extremely interesting discussions with our clients and between ourselves on the latest status of BEPS 2.0. Right at the time of our global transfer pricing conference, the OECD inclusive framework, so 130 countries that are discussing this, released new guidance. The guidance, which we now had time to look through in a lot of detail and can summarize some of the main points. The most interesting ones being related to scope in connection with Pillar 1, and that's specifically the amount A part of Pillar 1, which is also known under the catchy name of new taxing right. Our listeners probably know that this is the most novel and potentially complex mechanism out of the whole reform package that would allocate profits of a multinational group across different market jurisdictions where it is present and active using a formulaic approach. This is the already mentioned potentially big detour from existing transfer pricing rules and other international tax principles, because under amount A, you could be allocating profits to a jurisdiction where a group has zero physical presence, not even a regularly visiting sales representative or any own, so to say, structures on the ground. The guidance from the OECD now provides some useful clarification on the fully digital business models that would be captured in this in Pillar 1 Amount A, so-called automated digital services, ADS, types of business models. There are some positive examples of what this could cover and also negative examples of what types of businesses would not be included in the scope of Amount A. On top of this, there's further guidance for which types of businesses that are not classically associated with being digital that could be included, such as pharma. These businesses, which would be then captured under a heading called CFB, consumer-facing businesses, are ones that people do not necessarily immediately associate with BEPS 2.0, with words such as digital or digitalized. So the message here is that the discussions on OECD level have a potentially wide-ranging impact. We can give you the latest update from the January 14 and 15 consultation discussions, where a lot of commentators are actually proposing an even wider scope, are actually proposing to make sure that Pillar 1 Amount A, with these really new and potentially complex mechanisms for profit allocation, should apply to a wide group of companies. What there is agreement on is that there should be some minimum thresholds. So, for example, the euro 750 million revenues threshold, de minimis threshold that is already being used in case of country-by-country reporting, and some other thresholds around minimum profitability, above which only there would be a reallocation, as well as potentially how much business a group does outside of its domestic jurisdiction before it is being captured by Amount A Pillar 1 rules. One point on Pillar 1 that I would like to mention here, because I believe this is often missed, is the Amount B, which in many terms is referred to as this new safe harbor, even though it will potentially not be optional, for remunerating certain routine marketing and distribution activities. So a mechanism that will set potentially fixed levels of return for the local distribution and marketing entities, your typical LRDs, limited risk distributors, but not only. Now, the Amount B has the potential of being the so-called black horse of Pillar 1, because while everyone is focusing on the complexity and the innovative character of Amount A, Amount B may potentially have a much wider and relevant practical impact. There are no scope restrictions in terms of what industries will be covered, what business models will be covered, and there are no proposed de minimis thresholds. So in other words, if a group, a multinational group, has local distribution and marketing entities that fulfill the criteria, Amount B would apply. A number of interesting questions still are sort of being debated around the scope, which is one of the most important parameters for any reform. But it is clear that the OECD inclusive framework members will still need time to discuss and agree on those until mid of 2021 under the current timeline.
Thanks, Jacob. Very good remark on Amount B, which I also think should be more in the focus, or at least not be forgotten about in light of all the other topics. There are obviously many questions on BEPS 2.0. However, one pops up regularly, and this is the question of the treatment of losses. What's the latest status here?
Mm-hmm. This is a really, for us tax advisors, a thrilling area to debate. For our clients, more of an area to closely follow and potentially worry.
You have five more minutes.
Oh no! This is a longer topic, but I will summarize very briefly. At present, the guidance provided by OECD leaves the answers open as to the two main important questions. First of all, will losses that existed pre-introduction of BEPS 2.0, so-called pre-regime losses, if they will be accepted at all? And right now, it appears that majority of inclusive framework members and commentators agree that this should be allowed. But this will still be debated from a technical perspective. Some of the interesting points raised by countries that oppose to pre-regime losses focuses on the fact that if we allow pre-regime losses, what about pre-regime profits? So discussion ongoing on the acceptability, yes or no, of such losses. The other important question here is obviously the timing for which the use of losses will be allowed. There, we do not have any specific guidance yet. What is proposed is an earnout mechanism that will allow groups with losses or profit shortfalls, particularly in connection with Pillar 1 amount A that is linked to profitability levels, to sort of take into account those losses. Very similarly, this topic is obviously crucial for Pillar 2. Where the discussions are also ongoing. While Pillar 2 is not per se specifically a transfer pricing focused area, it is still potentially the most important element of BEPS 2.0 reforms. At present, the discussions focus on the prioritization of the rules under which Pillar 2 would ensure minimum taxation, with the income inclusion rule right now appearing to be the favorite of most commentators. The key question around what should be the minimum level of effective tax rate that Pillar 2 would ensure is the absolute crux of the matter here. And you hear very different views from certain countries proposing that it shouldn't be more of than 10 to 12%. Which would be at the level of some of the standard corporate tax rates of certain EU member states, to certain non-governmental organizations arguing very vocally that this reform should not result in anything below 20 to 25% effective tax rates that are being ensured. So you see what scope of discussion and technical analysis is needed here to ensure the rules are clear, that the tax dispute resolution mechanisms are in place to an extent that will allow the taxpayers to apply and safeguard the correct application of these rules. And importantly, there's timing, which would be my last point on this update here. Timing, which was confirmed by the OECD to still be mid-2021, so mid of this year, for when the technical reports should be agreed, with potential additional time afterwards to refine some of the specific areas. Now, while this sounds ambitious to all of us, what we need to bear in mind is two things. First of all, there is still very strong political commitment from G20 and various other countries to have BEPS 2.0 agreed. And for one crucial reason, this is a multinational consensus that we are trying to achieve here. And the alternative to BEPS 2.0 not happening will not simply be business as usual, but as we all know and have seen over the last 1 or 2 years, the alternative to BEPS 2.0 is unilateral action by a lot of separate jurisdictions by virtue of implementation of digital service taxes that we see popping up in many, many countries across the world, creating further uncertainty and risk of double taxation. So while the path to finalization of BEPS 2.0 is still challenging, there is very, very strong political commitment, and OECD has just restated the timeline of mid-2021 for the technical report to be published.
Okay, very good, Jacob. Thank you very much, Joanna. Obviously, it's very difficult to add something here, but maybe one or two brief observations from your perspective.
Yes, I was when Jack was discussing actually the scope and the origins of Pillar 1 and Pillar 2, I was thinking how it will end up. And again, we don't have a crystal ball, but thinking that it started before the pandemic, I mean, the BEPS 2 initiative with the focus, a bit simplified, but with the focus on the digital economy and digital type of businesses. And last basically year and a half, the technology, the acceleration of technology and virtual organizations is such big. There is such a big jump, actually. So I am thinking if Pillar 1 really stops at the digital economy and this big consumer-facing industries, or it's more to include there. And I don't know, Jakob, what do you think about it? But I think the original scope it was a starting point, but it will go beyond that, thinking how we actually operate and how the economy changes under pandemic.
In the very shortest, and this is now not my view, but input from the very recent consultation that happened in the last 2 weeks, a lot of input providers, and these are big groups, small groups, these are certain countries, propose for Pillar 1 scope to be widened, to mm-hmm. avoid exceptions and to actually make it almost applicable to everyone. There are opponents to this idea, but I think the direction that you just mentioned, Joanna, is reflected in how many groups and countries are starting to think about these reforms.
And it makes sense. I mean, it's such a fundamental change to the tax system. Why should it only apply to a limited number or limited sectors? Yeah. Thank you very much, Joanna, Jacob. Thanks a lot for your brief and concise discussions on the two topics. I enjoyed it. I hope our listeners enjoyed it as well. As I pointed out at the beginning, we took the themes from our global conference. This year's global conference is planned to be again physical in Berlin in October 2021, actually on October 13 and 14th. So you might want to mark your calendars. Obviously, nobody knows at that point of time whether a physical seminar of this size will be possible in October. So it will be hopefully physical, but alternatively virtual. So it's in any event wise to mark the calendar. Please ask your local PwC contact for further details and for an individual invitation. Thanks to all listeners. We appreciate your interest. Stay safe.